recorded live.
Oh, it's Steve. Or did Steve? Steve's doing it.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, I'll get going here.
18:08. I'm going to start the recording here.
This conference is being recorded.
Welcome out there.
All right. Hi, Rob. Welcome.
Is Henry in there?
Hello.
Hello. I know you've had snow because Fred had some.
Oh, we got a dust thing and some of it melted already.
Yeah, that's nice. It'd be nice if that was stayed that way, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had our fair share. Winter's over now.
Yeah, that's why I'm still here. We had 4 days of really cold weather, and now it's warmed up again.
Didi, where you at?
I'm Portland, Oregon.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Portland.
Please define cold, Didi.
43. Well, cold here was 23 degrees. It was very cold. Now it's in the 40s, you know.
I'll take it.
Yes. Very forgiving. It goes by. I mean, it stays, you know, rainy and windy and cold and sunny and all that stuff. I mean, we have a winter, but, you know, already the daffodils and everything are trying to pushing their heads up just above the ground, you know. So.
Well, I would imagine if you were off in eastern Oregon there, what might be pretty chilly up there in the High Mountain Plateau region.
Here in Portland?
No, off in the eastern part of Oregon. Over.
Eastern Oregon and up at Mount Hood, which is only an hour away from here, they have had lots of snow.
Yeah.
We've had a fair amount of rain already, which is great.
Hello, this is Schaefer Cox up in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Well, hi, Schaefer. Welcome to the call. This is Dee Farrell. We're just going to get started here. I'm glad you came in. Nice to have you here. Fred Smart is with us. Yep, and I don't know if you remember, Fred, Schaefer, when we start our call, we have a little electronic intro, and then Fred will be announcing you as our second guest. You made it back with us. Really looking forward to hearing from you.
Yeah,
Stevie, is Fred around?
Yeah.
Yeah, Fred's here.
Talking to Nicholas. And I asked if he'd be interested in coming on the show. He said yes.
Yes?
Michael Collins, the writer for
Freeport. Yeah, AFP used to be on RBN for a long time.
Yeah, he used to be on a show.
Okay.
His female Michael Collins Piper at yahoo.com. Collins, CNS, Piper, at yahoo.com.
Okay.
This might be something else. So hold on 1 minute. I have it here. From the other day. Okay.
Welcome to the call, Carl Swanson. I see you've joined us. And this is Phoebe in Portland. Nice to have you back again.
Yes, good to be back. Yeah.
And just a few minutes, Fred's going to be introducing you. We're just getting everyone lined up here. How's it going out where you are?
Oh, just, another day in Paris. Down here in Georgia.
Oh, that's nice and sunny.
Soon to change.
I guess you were in the Congress today.
Oh, I posted that on as soon as I could grab that one quick. That was
hilarious. That was great, yeah.
apparently the person who did this, Teresa Chow, she's never the director.
Great.
He read at the commission.
Wow, that's amazing.
Well,
it until it truly was. That was my.
Okay, about 90 seconds left, and then Steve's going to be muting. We're not going to mute you, Carl. So you're ready to go, and Fred's ready. Steve from West Virginia, and Rick will be coming up later speaking with us.
Fred, that's
your
email. Michael Paulson at yahoo.com.
Okay.
And that's taken to the phone number from address.
Okay. Okay, great.
Yeah, and that's his letter that Steve and the friend send out. Steve Burt's Corner was the funniest thing I've read in a long time. I laughed out loud the whole thing. So if you guys have it, it's all worth the read. It's the
book. It goes on and on.
Here in just a moment.
AN, American Underground Network.
The primary reason why the individual citizens of a country create a political structure is a subconscious wish or desire to perpetuate their own dependency relationship of childhood. Simply put, they want a human god to eliminate all risk from their life, pat them on the head, kiss their bruises, put a chicken on every dinner table, clothe their bodies, tuck them into bed at night, and tell them that everything will be all right when they wake up in the morning. This public demand is incredible, so the human god, the politician, meets incredibility with incredibility by promising the world and delivering nothing. So who is the bigger liar, the public or the godfather?
All revolutions have been led by young people. If you just think of the TV images of whether it's Tiananmen Square or whether it's the revolts in Central America or Europe, the young people, it's the college people who are more principled and not locked in and they're not embedded with the government. They are the ones who are concerned about the future because the future is theirs.
My research has shown at this point that the future laid out for us may be just about impossible to change. I do not agree with the means by which the powerful few have chosen for us to reach the end. I do not agree that the end is where we should end at all. But unless we can wake the people from their sleep, nothing short of civil war will stop the planned outcome.
It's the National Collective Consciousness Conference Call with Ray Mills in Salisbury, North Carolina, Jim Condit Jr. in Cincinnati, Ohio, Dee Dee Farrell in Portland, Oregon, Steve Harris in Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, live from Evanston, Illinois, your host, Fred Smart.
Okay, welcome back. Happy New Year, everyone. Steve has really a tremendously funny addition to our email. If you haven't received it, we'll request it and send it to you later on. It really is a hoot. Thank you, Steve. Got a great lineup tonight. Very, very serious information to share, situations to share. Beginning first up with Carl Swenson. Out of Georgia, the situation in Tennessee with Commander Fitzpatrick, as you all know, there was an attempt back last April to do a citizen's arrest. And almost like clockwork over the last 6-7 months, all of the people who had appeared in person to defend and support Commander Fitzpatrick have been indicted. Carl, a couple of days ago, was put into handcuffs and arrested, and he got bail, and he'll tell you the story about that in the first half hour of our call. Following immediately is Schaefer Cox. He was on with us last November. He's going to update us with his situation up there in Alaska. He was responding to a Liberty Bell call, and they're trying to slap a illegal weapons possession on him. He'll clarify that, but at the same time, if you haven't seen the video of him standing up in court there in Alaska challenging the subject matter jurisdiction and the whole nature of the corporate courts up there, this is really, really an incredibly educational time for everyone to pay attention, to watch what's happening up there, and like Walter Fitzpatrick and Carl's situation, it really is time for people to stand up and really follow up and get to the bottom of the truth. So Schaefer is on with Michael Donald from Alabama, part of the Assemblies Movement, to really shine a light on this whole situation, because it's not just Schaefer, it's not just Alaska. What Schaefer's doing, he's standing up for all of us all across the country. And then after Schaefer and Michael Donald, we have Rick and Dick back for a new rap to an old story, a cause of action, which they will outline. I've received it in the mail, and I've gone through the first part of all but one track of the five tracks to listen to. It's a very, very well-done piece called Stop Federal Government Tyranny Now, a plan for state legislatures to invoke state powers over the federal government. And after Rick and Dick, we're going to have, after a 3 to 4 week absence, John Stewart will update us on his situation, his court case, and the Show Me the Loan Project out of Arizona. So first up, Carl, thank you for coming back on the call. What you're going through and what Walter has gone through, very, very similar to what Schaefer is facing up there in Alaska. Tell us what happened a couple of days ago. I think you should be unmuted, Carl. You there? Hello?
How do I unmute?
There we go. We got Star 6.
You know,
sorry.
Okay. Are we there now?
Yeah, the system sometimes automatically mutes people. But
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, it's reassuring to know that there's other people out there that are standing up for the system as well, and that's I think that we're going to see more and more of that. This is just getting beyond the pale as we learn more and more about what is going on with this judicial system, the courts, the admiralty courts. You know, let me start by what happened on Tuesday. I went up to be a witness for Darren Huff in his federal case, where the prosecutor is trying to revoke bond on him and put him in jail, and at the very least have his ankle bracelet put back on. He was summarily, the prosecutor was summarily shot down. But I was up there in October for his motions hearing, and it was kind of interesting because I got wind that there was an indictment out there for me, but at the same time, I didn't want anything just hanging, so I made myself available. And in the October hearing, at the end of it, the prosecutor looked at me with incredulity, and he just kind of glared at me for a while. I guess he didn't have time to make any arrangements, so I was able to leave the courthouse with no problems. This time, it wasn't the case. When he spied me up, there was apparently some communications there within the prosecutor's stand there, and when I walked out the door after the hearing, I was arrested immediately by the federal marshals. It's kind of weird because, I mean, this is a misdemeanor case down in Monroe County, but they just want to make a point that anybody who bucks the system is not welcome in their area. And I mean to tell you, Walt did buck the system. A lot of people can question what he did and how he did it, his mythology. But the bottom line is this, you know, the Constitution is there for the common man. The common man can read it. He read it. He understands both the U.S. Constitution and the Tennessee Constitution. The Tennessee Code annotated, clearly stated that he was within his rights to perform a citizen's arrest. It also clearly stated that a jury member, grand jury member or petite jury member, doesn't matter, can only serve for a maximum of 2 years, and then they must be off for another 2 years. When he took his original case, which was the filing of information to the grand jury of Monroe County, he played hell just trying to get that that before them. And then it was a charade. It was absolutely charade. When he went to this alleged grand jury, there was a grand jury foreman and two grand jury members. I'm sorry, but that doesn't constitute a grand jury. He was visibly upset over that when you talked to him and saw him after that. and to a point where he had to do something. He had to find out what the heck was going on here. This isn't right. And that's when he did his investigation and found out that the grand jury foreman for this Monroe County system had been there for 27 consecutive years. 27 consecutive years. Now, okay, you've got the Tennessee Constitution on one hand, and you've got this situation on the other. Something's not jiving at all. He chose to go with what is there for the common man, which was the Tennessee Constitution. This is the law of the land. Well, that's where I showed up, which is April 1st, when he decided that he was going to effect a citizen's arrest. I filled out the appropriate forms to do that, and also an arrest warrant for this grand jury foreman. Not only him, the the judge and sheriffs involved in this. This is a fairly lengthy little list, but bottom line is he filled the forms out and then went into the grand jury room to effect the arrest. There was four people there that were witness to this. Myself, Darren Huff, a lady by the name of Tina out of North Georgia, and one other from Montgomery. I won't use his name right now because I don't even know if he's on that list. So before I talk to them, I don't want to get that name up. But at any rate, all the witnesses there were just that, just to witness what was going on. And Walt did effect the arrest. The police were called to, you know, by myself and one other person to make sure that they were there to, you know, take this man into custody. Well, they never took him into custody. In turn, they took Walt right out the door. And Walt would have no part of that. One of the sheriffs that took him out the door was one that was listed on the indictment, so he arrested him as well. Now, again, you can go with, well, his mythology was more like a bull in a china shop, and that's fine. But it gets back to the reality of the situation. The Constitution was written for the common man. And those who would say it's not understandable, well, all I can say is they've been the products of the education system as we know it. It's just a sad state of affairs. But anyway, he went for it, we witnessed it, and he wound up being arrested. A week later, 19 days, he had to show up for a hearing, which was his arraignment hearing. Oh, and by the way, after he was arrested there for doing that, he spent about 6 days in jail. They didn't post any records, anything that we could go on to post bail for him. They didn't do anything. And at that point, he was standing his ground. So he got out, and on the 20th, there's about 20 people that showed up there. There's a video of what happened to one of them, Darren Huff, on that day when he had a felony stop instigated against him, and that was they tried to get him for weapons violations. They couldn't. He was all completely legal, absolutely completely legal, and well within his rights to do everything he did. Again, there's information concerning that on my website, which is riseupforamerica.com. I invite you to take a look and see. You may have to scroll down the front page to get to some of the videos, but it's very interesting reading. So that's what happened on the 20th. After that, well, there was nothing that anybody could do on the 20th. I mean, what are you going to do? We could just witness. It's not like there was, 100,000 people there with pitchforks and torches and demanding some justice in this. No. 20 people, and they had probably 250 SWAT team members, FBI, TBI, city police, sheriffs, you name it. That place, you couldn't throw a stone without hitting one. So pretty much nothing was going to happen that day, and they made sure of that. So that was done. Now, It came a couple of days later. A few of us got together, and we were going to try and assist Walt in effecting his citizen's arrest. Not assist him by going up there and doing those arrests, no. By taking the information that Walt had provided and going to the various sheriffs in surrounding communities, asking them for support in doing this. One person was selected. That was Darren Huff, to go up and do this. Well, he went up to one sheriff, and it was in a county adjoining Monroe County. No joy there. So the next one he was going to hit was up in Knoxville. And by the time he got up to Knoxville, apparently they'd had enough, and they don't want any part of this. So they had him arrested, I mean, shut down I-75 both directions with another massive show of support, I mean, for the Homeland Security group. They had everybody out there to stop Darren, who wasn't even, I don't think he was carrying. He may have had a gun in his truck. Everything he had was legal, but he was up there to talk to the sheriffs. He wasn't up there to do anything other than that. But they want to, you know, label him as a domestic terrorist now. All right. This is going to be a very interesting trial because Darren is ready to invoke his constitutional, his sovereign rights. He is ready to do that. And before he does that, he wants to see how this is going because this is just such a charade. It's an absolute charade. And it's so surreal. I don't know if you've ever been to a federal court before, but in this particular court, I mean, I haven't been to see this, so maybe this is just the standard way of doing things these days. But I felt like I was in some sort of Star Wars movie because when I walked in there, there were laptops, a couple of them set up at the defense team's table, a couple of them set up at the prosecution table, one at the witness stand, one at the judge's desk, one at the counsel's desk, a court reporter had one, and the podium where you pled your case, there was one there too. I mean, it was just all electronic. Nothing was done with paper, nothing. And they were all just plugging away on their computers and showing evidence back and forth on their computers. Surreal. So anyway, that was then. And that on that October meeting, I found out that from the defense counsel that I was on the indictment list as well. I asked them for a copy of that. They said, yes, I'd be happy to give that to you. But they never did. I called several times, faxed, emailed, you know, nothing. They never did. Okay, fine. But I had been notified. So I knew that henceforth and forevermore, if I went back up there, better be prepared. And I was. I made sure this time that I went that I took somebody with me. I made sure that I had enough for bail. And I made sure that they got their hands on that one when I got out of the courtroom. Very simple procedure. And, yeah, bigger than life. They took me in and showed me the capias bond document, which is the arrest warrant. Which said that, you know, they're arresting me for riot, interrupting a meeting or procession, and then comma, retaliation for past events. What the heck is that? I guess it's some new statute that they created down there. But regardless, you know, that's what they wanted to get me on, and that's what they did. So arrested me, put me in the holding cell there at the Knoxville courthouse, and waited for the sheriffs from Monroe County to come pick me up. Now, the whole sequence really only took about 5 hours. So in comparison to Walt and what Darren went through, I went through nothing. Okay, they didn't know what was going on. I had an inkling of what was going on. So, like I said, the whole arrest sequence only lasted about 5 hours. But I will tell you this, I'm very much looking forward to defending myself. And the defense tactic that your friend in Alaska used is very much the direction I want to travel as well. So I think that the people are starting to wise up and starting to use the tools that are available, and we're doing the homework. So it's going to get interesting. I have to show up on, let's see, the 18th of January. For my, that's where they assign my court date. There's some stuff that I may want to file prior to that. I'm going over my options there. But on that day, Walt is having his trial too for resisting arrest. You know, he beat up the officer's fist with his head. It was terrible, terrible thing. The whole thing is a charade. People I've been dealing with in Monroe County, a church group there, their leader was arrested, I guess the day before or the same day that I was brought in. I've been working with him to help him get his message and Walt's message out to the people of Monroe County, and they really aren't really, they aren't keen on that at all. So they, they hijacked the guy's trailer full of equipment over a license tag that they that the county next door refused to give him because it was a church vehicle. You know, it's just typical small town stuff that really is just, I guess, designed to generate some revenue of some sort. You know, $50 here, $100 there, but also give them the opportunity to use whatever violations happen for whatever purposes they want. In this case, an $80 ticket, which was not paid over a 2-week period of time, escalated into a $300-and-some-odd ticket, which then escalated to the point where they thought it was justified to go confiscate this man's tractor trailer full of equipment, tools, and whatnot that the church used to build the church. So, about $100,000 worth of equipment for a $380 ticket. Not a bad payoff. And again, this from the time that he got his ticket till the time that they did this, we're talking 2 weeks in December. And from the time that it was confiscated till the time it was auctioned off was 1 week. What the heck is going on here?
Wait, they auctioned off the property?
Oh, yeah, auctioned off the property. The guy hadn't even gone to trial, nothing, you know, just auctioned it off. Done, gone. This is Monroe County, Tennessee, okay? This is deliverance on steroids. This is every evil that you can possibly imagine in a small town. It's incredible, totally incredible. And, you know, when I go up again for my next hearing, yeah, I'll go with some people because I don't trust this area. They have a very, very bad habit. I will tell you that I was not treated unjustly. I do not have any complaints on the way I was handled. None. This was designed strictly to show that if you have anything to do with what Walt was trying to accomplish, we don't want you up there as a witness. We don't want you in Tennessee. We don't want you specifically in Monroe County, and we will do our best to make sure that we can persuade you not to come back. It's a little power play. So here we go, guys. You know, we are in a civil war. We are in a civil war. This is the civil war. It starts small.
Well, we're going to open it up for comments and questions because I know, you know, this is the same thing that's going to be cropping up and is cropping up all across the country. Just star six yourself, anyone, for a comment or question to Carl.
I have a question for Carl. This is
okay.
Dick of Rick and Dick fame. Carl, are you familiar with the Flynns, Jack and Margie Flynn?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I am.
They could be an enormous asset for you right now if you get a hold of them. They've had extensive experience with this exact type of thing.
Yeah.
And they could give you advice like you wouldn't believe.
Well,
I'm
very interested in hearing all of this input that I can right now. I can tell you that there's going to be limited opportunities for me to do things before this January 18th meeting, but there are some things I can't do prior to that. So I'm going to investigate those options starting probably in the morning if I can comprehend and read.
Well, they have had very extensive experience dealing with judges and the whole court system, very, very extensive, and they've had enormous success in stopping just this exact kind of thing by giving advice. They don't appear themselves as witnesses and so forth,
sure,
but they give advice. And
I would highly
recommend
to talk to them.
I would highly recommend you give them a call. Would you like to have their telephone number?
I can't write it down right now. I'm not in a position to, but if you would, please email me that information. My email address is P. Revere, as in
Paul
Revere.
Wait a minute. P as in Paul Revere, yeah?
Yeah, at riseupforamerica.com.
P at just plain P?
P-R-E-V-E-R-E.
P.
Revere.
R-E-V-E-R-E?
Uh-huh.
Paul Revere at?
Riseupforamerica.com.
Riseupforamerica.com. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Yeah, if you'll send me that, I'd be most appreciative.
Okay. I highly recommend you do it. Okay.
Well, thank you.
All right.
Hey, Carl, have you heard of the pre-Civil War due process?
Pre-Civil War due process? No, I can't say that I have.
Okay, I'll get your email and I'll send you some information. The one thing I've been listening to a fellow on a Wednesday night call talking about the pre-Civil War due process is that he's going right after the jugular and challenging the 14th Amendment, that it was never properly ratified, therefore it's hearsay, it's null and void. And the second any court, any judge, any cop, whatever, treats you as a 14th Amendment citizen, they lose jurisdiction because they have now brought fraud upon you and denied you your due process.
I have it in my possession. I went to the Georgia archives, and in 1957 I have the Georgia Memorial of the Congress, which clearly states that very thing, that the 14th Amendment was not legally ratified because the duly appointed representatives at that time, for just prior to Reconstruction, were summarily dismissed, as they were for all of the 10 southern states, and I think it was one northern state as well. But they were all summarily removed so that Lincoln could get his 14th Amendment passed. So, you know, I have all that stuff. I truly do. I don't know how to use it right now. At this stage, I don't know that it's applicable. There are some other avenues for me to travel right now. But when I get towards the actual trial date, yeah, all that's fair game. All of that is fair game.
Yeah, you can definitely bring that up, because after 1861, it's all de facto. And if you want to play in their codes and their game, that's like playing Russian roulette. So
that's exactly right. That's exactly right. There's several different tacks to take. I'm trying to choose which one is going to be best suited for me. I'd like to know what kind of court I'm in, whether it be a commerce court, a common law court, or a military court. I need to know these things before I know who I'm fighting. It may not even get to that. I may try and petition for my accuser for an administrative hearing, and I will have to do that within the next few days. The administrative hearing would bypass the court system altogether and go to the source of the alleged statutes, the rule of man law, people that oversee that. So I'm working that one as well. All I know is that, like myself, and who's this guy in Alaska? I haven't heard about him before. Schaefer
Cox, you got to stay on the line here. You'll hear him.
I'm on the line.
Great, Schaefer. Glad to meet you, Schaefer. I want your information too, because again, we all have to approach this from the same angle and let them know that we're not going to stand for this anymore. This little charade that they're playing with us has got to end, and it ends with us individually.
You are free the moment that you're not afraid. That's when you're free. So you got to decide to be free, and you've got to act like a king because you are a king. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing that you need to understand, boy, I can really feel for you. I know just exactly what you're going through. We've got a little bit of a different situation here because we have a huge, robust militia. These guys, you can go in and you can argue with them, and you can argue matters of law.
Mm-hmm.
They will not even hear it. It won't even register. It won't make sense to them because they don't operate under the rule of law. They operate under the rule of force. That's the only language that they speak, and it's the only language that they understand.
Amen.
That's
why I'm envious of you, Schaefer, because Alaska does have such a robust militia. And at some point, they will be called into action. If I had had that very same militia here when I convened the grand jury way back in March of 2009, I would have had the enforcement arm, the constitutionally duly empowered enforcement arm that is required for those grand juries to actually have effect.
Well, you just said what you need.
Hey, Jim, let's make that a smooth transition here. Looks like we got a nice segue here. Schaefer, thank you for coming on the call. For those of you who weren't on the call when Schaefer presented the last time, he was a delegate at the Continental Congress here in St. Charles, Illinois, from the state of Alaska, one of three. Did an incredible job and was from day one, there was a sense of order and leadership and a guiding light coming from this gentleman's presence, how he interacted with the other delegates. And we were just very blessed to have you, Schaefer, here at the Continental Congress. And he came on last November to talk about the solution that the Liberty Bell system and the whole process of connecting and organizing from the grassroots, instituting the militia, et cetera, et cetera. And Schaefer, kind of fast forward here, but you were in the process of responding to a Liberty Bell call. And why don't you take it from there? And but the gratifying thing here is that because of the support up there, what Schaefer has done in the court was totally videoed. It's totally transparent. And this is really an incredible opportunity for all of us to learn, to be educated, and to share this knowledge and all come together as one, just not in Alaska, but for all across the country. And I think just the courage that Schaefer has, we're just so really humbled to have you on the call, Schaefer, to give us an update.
Well, thank you. It's a blessing to be here. It's always a blessing to interact and to be edified by like-minded people who know that God is God and man is man, and that man cannot be God. Anytime man tries to play God, we always do it poorly, and that's more evident today than ever. Let me speak just briefly to what this good soldier in Tennessee was just talking about enforcement. A lot of people are shy of the militia. They're shy of that idea, and they kind of, you know, recoil from that. And that's just a holdover from the social trauma that we all sustained in the public conditioning centers. The John Dewey public education system, where the supreme value is fitting in. And we're scarred by being raised in a Lord of the Flies state-owned orphanage. So, I mean, some of us escaped that, and praise God for that, and others of us have recovered from it, and praise God for that. But most of us, everybody, I'd say without exception, in this country, have felt the fallout from that horrible, horrible monopoly on raising children. So that's why people are shy of the militias, because of that social scarring. Now, the reason that the militia is so important is because one cannot offer peace who does not hold its alternative. Okay, the difference between groveling and negotiating is whether or not you can kick the other guy's ass. Okay, if you can kick his ass, you can negotiate and be cordial. But if you're helpless, then you grovel. All right? Now, he talked about the militia being an enforcement arm. I really believe when he said that the militia here in Alaska will most likely be put into action sooner or later, there is more chance that you down there in Tennessee maybe you have big militia, I don't know, but some place where there's just little or no militia, that those guys will be the ones that get forced into action. The fact that we have a militia that is several thousand strong and highly organized and brazen and uncompromising when it comes to liberty, I believe will be the very reason that we don't have blood in the streets here. I mean, the last time that I was in court, well, every time I go to court, they just treat me with total respect. They don't ever bulldoze me or plow me over. They never make me take my hat off or say Your Honor or stand up like that. I refer to them as the alleged judge or Your Administrativeness. And I don't do anything. The police are always, oh, yes, sir, you know, very, very nice there. And they're doing that because they know we've got them outmanned and outgunned. And we're not trying to attack these people and their corporation and change it. That's their corporation. And just like God's people are commanded in Revelation chapter 18, which is, well, I can't be any sort of certain interpreter of what that means exactly, but it sure sounds a lot like what's going on right now, where it says that Babylon, which is the origination of statutory law, Babylon, the great, and all of the merchants who conduct their business by the laws of the sea have drunken of her immorality, and all the kings of the earth have been partakers of her immorality, and they've traded gold and fine woods and linen and the souls of men. And it says, come out of her, my people, and be not partakers of her iniquities, that you receive not of her plagues. Now, that's a calling that God has given to his people throughout all the ages, to come out of her, my people. Moses didn't go to Pharaoh and say, let my people have union breaks. He went to Pharaoh and he said, let my people go. The command is not for us to go in and reform a wicked pagan system. The command is for us to come out and live by the laws of nature and of nature's God that are written in the Bible and that are written on our hearts. And if we are brave enough, if we have the courage to do that, God is all about the underdog. And the whole reason that we're in this cosmic charade that is this planet right now is because the enemy came before him and brought his character into question. And you can read about this in Job. You know, all the angels assembled and they came before God, before the king, and they said, you are not good, you know, and people don't just, you know, there is none righteous. He said, well, have you considered my servant Job? You know, in the beginning, Lucifer wanted to be like unto God. He brought his character into question. He brought an accusation against the kind intention of his will, and God said, all right, fine, I'm going to show you guys. All right, we're going to have this planet for all of the heavenly hosts to see, and all of the men and women that are created in my image to see. And I am going to demonstrate in such a real and powerful way that the only thing that works is that which is in accordance with me and the kind intention of my will. And so, and this is super pertinent, because this is the powerhouse. This is what's driving us in Alaska. Not just a bunch of disgruntled people that don't like paying the man. It's this courage that is found in knowing who you are and who you aren't that gives you the authenticity and the horsepower to stand in front of the black-clad father of lies in their pretended courtroom and tell them, if you touch me, we're going to kill you. And so in Deuteronomy, it says, when the people assemble to go to war, it says, this is a command. This isn't just advice. This is a command. It says, when you go to war, when you go to battle, right? It was even more specific than war, specific battle one day. It says, when you go to battle and you see the enemy with horses and chariots and armies more numerous than yourselves, boy, I identify with that situation. So does this guy that was just on, right? When you see that, do not be afraid or tremble, for it is the Lord your God that goes before you to fight for you, to rescue you. It says, when the people have assembled, the priests shall speak to them and say, is there anyone among you who has planted a vineyard and who's not yet eaten of its fruits? Let him go, lest he be killed in battle and another man eat of his fruits. Is there any man who has built a house and has not yet lived in it? Let him go, lest he be killed in battle and another man should inhabit his house. Is there any man who is engaged to be married and has not yet married her? Let him go, lest he be killed in battle and another man take his wife. And so what it's saying there is it's saying go through and weed out everybody who has an excuse. In the militia, we got a code word for that. It's called feed the cat. All right. Oh, where's Johnson? Oh, he had to feed the cat. Now, that just means he came up with some hokey excuse to not be out at training day or not show up for a security detail or whatever it was that he was told to do. And you know what? People feed the cat three times in a row, boom, they get decommissioned. All right? And that's a biblical principle. Okay, so then it says, keeping on with Deuteronomy chapter 20, or it might be Leviticus. I don't know. It's chapter 20 in the books of the law, one of them. It says, when the people are, when the priests have finished speaking to them, the officers shall speak to them further and say, is there any man here who is faint-hearted? Let him depart, lest his brother see his fear and his heart melt like yours. The officers are done speaking to the people. You shall appoint commanders over tens, fifties, hundreds, and thousands and go to war. All right? This is how God's people are supposed to go to war. And that's the courageousness that he calls for. It's not about numbers, because the battle belongs to the Lord. And God delights to show himself strong for the few, for the outnumbered, for the ones in the hopeless situation that will cry out to him and say, I am going to live by you and your law, let come what may. Man, you are unstoppable when you accept that. And you've got to accept it. You've got to accept the fate. You know, I had federal agents try to kill me and my family this summer. And you know what? If they busted into our house and shot me and my family, which what they were planning to do, that would make God look bad. And God is not mocked. And that would not be the end of the story. And I tell you what, when this show is done, everything that happened is going to praise his name. And unless we are abiding in the firm conviction of that knowledge, we will be scared people that will have shit in our boots any time the man addresses us. And that does not bring God glory. That brings glory to Satan. It brings glory to him and says, wow, this guy is so powerful that he makes the saints tremble. And that's not how we can live. So with that background and that base of who and what you have to be in order to live with a smile and with victory and with a spring in your step in the face of this overwhelming imperialistic tyranny, with that being understood, let me give you a brief summary of what my summer has been like. Back in December, just after Continental Congress, which is where they got my number and said, we've got to take this young guy out, like Ron Paul said on the beginning of this call, it's always led by young people. Well, I'm in my 20s. So back in December, they transferred out all of the FBI and federal agents and ATF and brought in six guys just for me in the militia. And they started in. And let me tell you what, these cats play dirty. And they started with a character assassination, all these big domestic violence charges, which that's their favorite trick because, and you guys need to watch for this because they're going to do it to others and we need to catch on to their tricks. They didn't have a lick evidence, but when you say, oh, this guy's a wife beater, then everybody is going to be like, ooh, I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. And it'll make the sheep scatter. And there's really no way to counter that except to predict it and forecast it and get people prepped for it when it comes, which we had done, so nobody bought it, and it really didn't stick around town. But it seems to have stuck in the lower 48, so whatever. But anyway, my wife and I were just blindsided by this. You know, what the heck is this? You know, well, we want to go to trial. We want to clear our name. And they said, well, if you take this to trial, we're going to take your kids away for the duration of the trial. And we're going to drag it out for 8 or 9 months. Well, holy crap, you know. They said, well, even the district attorney said, the accuser of the brethren is what I call him. The accuser of the brethren said, you know, this is obviously not designed for a conviction. It's designed for headlines. I was like, well, you got your headlines. Why don't you drop this case? There's nothing to it. And we didn't know what was happening. Come to find out later, it was these drug enforcement agency guys that were pushing this and filing all these complaints and working their mojo on us. So they said, if you don't plead guilty, we won't attack your children. Well, man, I got no choice at that point. I mean, it's either start the killing or, you know, not do that. And I didn't want, so I pled guilty, which was a mistake. Never negotiate with pirates. I've learned that the hard way. Please believe me, don't negotiate with terrorists and pirates, which is what these people are. Don't do it. Don't enjoy them. Home team always wins at the de facto court. So pled guilty to that. Rocky road, lots of bad press, but hey, any press is good press, I suppose. We put that one to the test. Then, 2 weeks later, then I get another charge for another felony charge for unlawful contact. Then I get another charge for, I got 6 criminal charges in like 2 weeks. Just keep going, and they're just stacking them up. If they can't lock you up in prison, they'll tie you up in court. Next one is somebody who's a known supporter and sympathizer of the militia and the Liberty Bell system and all that stuff. She calls me up. She says, hey, there's these cops came up and they just kicked in my door and came in my house. And I asked them if they had a warrant, and they said, we don't need no stinking badges, and just kept coming in my house. And I said, all right, well, I'll be right there. So we sent out a Liberty Bell call. A whole bunch of Liberty Bell responders showed up, and I was just standing outside the house taking notes. With a pen and a paper, and this cop comes up behind me and grabs my notepad away from me and takes it away and puts my hands behind me and starts pinching my fingers in this some sort of, like, evil voodoo grip, you know? I mean, like, these cops must have books they read on how to hurt people's hands and stuff. I mean, it's like the opposite of the Kama Sutra or something, like how to make people feel bad. And so he's reefing on my fingers, and he goes, you know, what's your name? And I said, I'm not interfering or doing anything. You just, I'm on your side. Do your job. I'm just taking notes. And he goes, do you have any ID on you? And I said, well, I have a 380 in my pocket. Little, you know, one of those little Ruger pocket pistols, a little keychain gun. And he goes, okay. And he puts handcuffs on me. And I said, well, am I under arrest? And he says, yes. And I said, well, what for? And he goes, I don't know. I'm going to have to go look up some laws. And he hauls me down to the station, and all the cops leave. And later, another trooper told me that whole thing was just a big setup to get me arrested, and it was just an unlawful search. Actually, it was just breaking and entering to get us to show up so they could get me sucked back into their system. And again, Drug Enforcement Agency agents are pushing this whole thing. So then I get charged with fifth-degree weapons misconduct, which is some low-down misdemeanor of not telling a cop I had a gun in my pocket, which that violates the Second Amendment, the Seventh Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Ninth, the Tenth. I mean, the whole swoop. But they're not they're a corporation. They're not operating under the Constitution. So who am I to criticize their company policy? But I don't work for that company, and I'm not involved in it in any way. That's the distinction. That's my out. So then we go before the black-clad father of lies, the judge, and they say, the prosecutor is like, we want to have this guy barred from doing any public speaking and any organizing of people, and we want to have him, you know, that he can't be within sight of a cop and all this stuff. And fortunately, the room was packed with press and militia, and they didn't go for all that, but just ongoing hassle. Then, a couple days after this is all in the course of 2 weeks, man. I, like, totally got joked, all right? And within the course of 2 weeks, and this is Dodge showing himself strong, man, all the crap that happened to me this summer was a blessing from God, because I saw his mighty hand working in my life in a way that makes me so confident that I will charge and follow him into any battle without any hesitation. He truly is our deliverer. Like it says in Isaiah, the Lord is our king, the Lord is our judge, and the Lord is our lawgiver. He will save us. That's legislative, executive, and judicial. And he is who we look to. Man, he saved us in so many powerful ways this summer. It's amazing. I'll get to that. It's just amazing. Couldn't be anything but him. It is so far out of the realm of coincidence or any probability. It is divine. So, these two little girls, you know, in their early 20s, of course I'm in my early 20s, but, well, whatever, They're ditzy dummies. Okay, they show up at our door, and they say, "We're here to take Seth Cox." That's my 1.5-year-old. They say, "We're here to take Seth Cox. We're from the Office of Children's Services." And I said, "We got an echo on this line. Somebody fix it." I said to them, "I go crap. What do I do here? You know, I knew there was funny business going on. Again, I didn't know that it was the drug enforcement agents pushing all this stuff at the time. But they're here at the door asking for my son. What do I do?" I thought, well, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi did this one time, and it worked. So I just sort of waved my hand in front of their face, and I said, "I'm not the man you're looking for." And they turned around, and they walked away. And I shut the door, and I was like, wow, it worked. And so my wife and I packed up a duffel bag and grabbed a rifle and just abandoned our house. And we have a big, nice house in the ritzy part of town, you know, and, you know, have nice vehicles and, you know, a good life, you know, and make a decent living and everything like that. And we just fled, just abandoned our house. And that is something that everybody who's listening right now needs to make peace with doing right now, because you might have to do that. And let me tell you what, we're back in our house now, and it was good for us to leave with nothing but a rifle and a sea bag and our family. Because that taught us that that was all you really needed. And we all that stuff can just slip through our hands, and it's okay. And I had my wife, and I had my children, and I had my king. And we were living in safe houses and underground, and, you know, with the militia. I mean, the guys in the militia just make me cry, you know. They're so dedicated, and they're such men of principle, and they're just the sacrifices that they make. I'm really proud of my men. They are amazing. And, oh, man, I just can't tell you how much I admire them, from the least to the greatest. They are wonderful guys, and their families, too. All 3,500 of them are just gems. So we're living in safe houses, underground, running from these people that are looking for us. And let me tell you what, we cried out to God, you know. And the heart of the king really is in the hand of the Lord. That doesn't mean that he's going to cut him any slack or spare him from eternal damnation, burning in hell. I think he's going to do that because he has to be a just God. But we saw people from all branches of government, state, local, federal, the military, from all across the world and also locally in Fairbanks, we saw them break ranks with the powers that be to come and help us. They saw what was going on. We'd be driving down the road, and a cop would come up behind us and turn his lights on and pull us over, and he would just walk. He just walked up to the door, and I'm on all kinds of probate. I got Kevlar and grenade launchers in the back seat, you know. I mean, it's just like, oh, crap, this is not going to end well, you know. The cop walks up to the door, and he just hands me this manila envelope, and he says, "Hang in there, buddy. A lot of us are pulling for you." And he hands me this manila envelope and walks back to his car and drives off. And I opened that up, and that was my entire domestic terrorist profile that was not supposed to be given to me. It says, don't tell this guy that he's on the domestic terrorist list and all this stuff. So I got all this information. All right? We went and we asked the provost marshal to protect us, because they're the last remaining de jure law enforcement that's not, you know, de facto corporate code enforcers that just enforce company policy on U.S. citizens, which are members of the corporation. And they didn't understand it, but they figured it out and they understood it. And the FBI told the post commander to bar us from post. And he refused. And he told my wife and I that we could have political asylum on post. He said, if they have a federal arrest warrant for you with all of the I's dotted and all of the T's crossed, I don't have any choice but my hands are tied. I'll have to let them come on and arrest you. But we can have MPs with you so that they don't shoot you when they try to arrest you. Now, here is what the supervising agent from this team of guys that came up from Aurora, Colorado to kill me and my wife and my little baby. Here's what the supervising agent said. He said, quote, "Our plan is to try to take Seth from Schaefer and Marty. And when we do that, we believe that will be sufficient to elicit a display of force, at which point we will shoot all three of them." All right, now they need a little bit of local cooperation to pull this off, to get this to happen. All right, and they start going around panhandling, trying to get people to cooperate with this. They went to a judge, and they got a judge to sign a writ of assistance to come and take Seth away from me and Marty with a SWAT team. And by the way, the whole reason for them coming and taking our son away from us with a SWAT team is a picture of him on Facebook playing with ammunition belts like it's choo-choo trains, like driving his little matchbox cars on a 223 saw belt like it's a train. Oh, he's, you know, unsafe. You know, him, you know, this is neglect. He's playing with ammunition. Well, did it ever occur to you that maybe we were right there taking the picture? Besides, that's my kid. And if Schaefer Cox's boy is going to play with ammunition, there's not a damn thing you can say about it. That's my decision and nobody else's. So, but anyway, that's what they're acting on. So then they get this writ of assistance, which is what started the Revolutionary War, let's not forget. And they go down to the state troopers. And they say, hey, we need you to come help us with a SWAT team. Come take this toddler away. And the Alaska State Troopers go, yeah, about that. We don't have the manpower to safely execute that writ. And they're like, well, what are you talking about? We're talking about a young couple and a toddler. And they said, yeah, well, we could get that part done, but we're afraid that there would be counterattacks from the militia within hours, and there would be troopers and their families dead all over Fairbanks, and we just don't have we just are in no way prepared to deal with that. So we can't help you with that. Holy moly, this sent a shockwave up the chain of command in a good way. So, now what do they do? It goes back up to the judge or the pretended judges and all this stuff, and everybody starts panicking, and they don't know what's going to happen, and the attorney general is getting involved and everything like that. And we're trying to stop them, and all of the militia is just like a buzzing beehive all over town. And we've got just, I mean, it's just huge. I mean, everybody and their brothers in the militia. And, they came to town and they went, the DEA agents went out to the electrical company and they're like, stay away from this residence and tell all of your guys that are on the right-of-way crew to not go near Schaefer Cox's house. Well, they send that memo down. The whole right-of-way crew is in the militia. It's like, welcome to Fairbanks where you can't keep a secret, you know. Not even the FBI can keep a secret. Now, the question is, why is the Drug Enforcement Agency going after me and my family? Okay, I mean, I've never so much as smoked a doobie in my life. I mean, I don't even drink coffee. I mean, not that I think that that's bad, but I've never been, that's not my bag. So, why Drug Enforcement Agency? Well, the reason is every time that they bust a big drug dealer, or sell drugs themselves, I think. But for sure, anytime they bust a big drug dealer, they just keep the money. The cash just goes into their budget. And so they've got this huge cash under the table budget that they can go around and do stuff that would receive unwanted scrutiny if it went through the Congressional Budget Office. And so that's why they operate. And then also a lot of the people that hate the U.S., the U.S. Washington statutory, despotic empire in other parts of the world fund their fight against them with drug money. And so their DEA is always going after terrorists. But anyway, they're just like the front runners of the sinister stuff. The dictator's challenge is always finding people who are as wicked and conscienceless as he is to carry out their wishes. Sorry, I had a call beeping and I had to get it off the line. That's always their problem. And the Achilles heel of any empire is the boots on the ground who have a conscience. And that's who we saw come to our aid, was the boots on the ground that had a conscience. Half of them were just afraid of what the militia would do to them, and the other half of them actually believed in what we stand for. And wanted to help us because they actually wanted to, and they weren't just afraid of what the militia would do to them if they were party to this federal folly. And this is the way it's got to be. There's either going to be one-way aggression or a two-way standoff. That's our only option. So those of you who have been trepidly avoiding the militia are facilitating violence. Okay? Compliance fosters aggression. Compliance fosters progression. If you sit by and you do nothing, the blood that they spill will, in a certain way, be on your hands. So grow a pair and start a militia. And you just need a small remnant that is brave enough to stand up and take the tomatoes from the sheeple. Don't worry about those masses of sheeple. All right? People get all wrapped around the axle about all these dumb, ignorant masses. Look, this fight is 5% that believe in tyranny and are benefiting from it against 5% that believe in liberty and will stop at nothing to procure it. And the rest of those people, that 95%, are just inconsequential one way or another. If they're not going to stand up to tyranny, they're sure not going to give us any problems. They're basically just spoils of war to whoever wins, and they're either going to ride the coattails and get a free benefit of the liberty that and rule of law that we secure for them, or they're going to be the chattel property of the tyrants if they win. They're just totally inconsequential. They don't matter. So don't get wrapped around the axle about what they say or what they blog on the internet about us or anything like that. They just don't matter at all. So anyway, what next happened is this judge said, hey, you got to come in here and have a secret trial. And I said, ho, 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 forget that, buddy. And so I sent all of my officers down there, all the command staff, and they went down there and said, they said, if you want an audience with Schaefer, it's going to have to be public. And they're like, oh, well, we're going to get him for a failure to appear, blah, 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 blah. And they made all this guff, and then they just rescheduled it for a week later. So then the next week I went down there, and the courtroom was packed with militiamen and their families and with press. And this was had to do with taking away our son, which had just been turned into nothing but them playing a kazoo once their trigger pullers decided that they weren't going to be in on it. Then they were just, dumb bumping with no force to back it up. I sat down in front of the alleged judge, the administrator in the black robe, and I said, look, I'm not here to dispute about your statutes, and I'm not here to dispute about any particulars, but there's something very, very serious that you and I need to address as men of influence. I'm talking to this guy, Mike McConnell was the pretended judge's name. And I said, he lives in town here, and, he's like an okay guy as far as best spots go. And I say to him, look, this looks like a politically driven attack on me and my family. Now, whether it is or not is kind of irrelevant, although I've got a lot of evidence to support that it is. First they said, we just want to interview your son. We said, all right, well, we got nothing to hide. Let's go ahead and do it. And they said, all right, well, we said, but we want our attorney to be there. They said, oh, no, can't have that. Okay, well, we want it to be videotaped. They said, oh, no, we can't create any records of this interview. And we're like, okay, well, you guys can suck it because we think your guys are up to no good and this means war, so lock your doors. And that was, the beginning of kind of the standoff. There's no cooperation. I mean, if you won't fight and kill to protect your own family, what would you fight and kill to protect? Your money? Your house? All those things pale in comparison to my own son and my own wife. And so
And so, and I mean, you say this, and some people might even cringe at me saying this on a call with a bunch of patriots. They know we talk about this. They know we would do that. Gosh, drop the fig leaf. They know we would kill them if they mess with our family. And by God, that's something we should be proud of, not ashamed of. So we go into court there, or the administrative venue. Who the hell knows what it is? I don't know. But we go in there to the pirate ship, and we say to them, I say, this looks like a politically driven attack. I said, and I think it is. But even if it wasn't, it's looking like a politically driven attack, and that is very dangerous. I said, now there is a tremendous amount of autonomy within the militia and within the different units within the militia. Now I can give the order for all of these guys to stand down. But you know what, Mike? I don't, from one father to another father, I don't want to put my influence to the test while the lives of you and your children are on the line. I said, if you want a bloody fight, if you want a war, then we've got one hell of a war with your name on it. But if you want peace, well, then that's what we want too. But part of that is that this aggression and it's being perceived as something quite sinister has got to stop. I said, now I'm doing everything within my power to keep the peace and to facilitate a peaceful, cordial coexistence between you and yours and me and mine. But you're not making that any easier for me. So if you want peace, then that's what we want too. If you want war, that's what we're gonna give you. But we want peace, and that's what we want. And he says, well, that's very encouraging. That's all he said, the whole thing. And he turns over to the attorney general and looks at her. And she goes, yeah, we'll get this taken care of. The next day, we had a letter from the Office of Children's Services saying, oh, all these charges are totally unsubstantiated, and Seth Cox is probably one of the safest kids in Alaska, you know. I sort of reamed him a little bit more in the courtroom than I just told you. I kind of led into him about thinking that children are property of the state, and they cited parents patre, and I was like, you crooks speak Latin, because if you said it in English that children are property of the state, which is what parents patre means, then people would lynch you. That's why you speak Latin. And I said, but I figured out what it means, and all my men know, and this is not looking good. And I said, and all of these cowboys, all these trigger-happy cowboys in the Drug Enforcement Agency that are up here from Colorado are going to shake up the beehive and get us into this big bloody brawl, and then they're going to hop on an airplane and fly to the next town to start a fight, and we're going to be left here mourning the dead. Let's not get buffaloed by these yahoos. They're no different than the trigger-happy fight pickers that we have to kick out of the militia. There's no reason for us to live anything except in peace, but you've got to stop aggressing us. So that was the end of that. Then they keep pushing with this weapons misconduct thing, but I tell you what, man, every time I go into that court, man, they treat me with total respect. They treat me like a foreign diplomat. They don't make me follow any of their rules or anything like that, and I don't, because I'm not of them. And we're working with Secretary of the Delegates, Michael Donald, with the Assembly Post. They're doing a wonderful job of restoring the Republic. And let me just reiterate, it's not our job to fix the corporation. People are like, oh, the system's broken. The system's broken. The system is not either broken. It's fixed. That's the problem. If it was broken, we can fix it. But it's already been fixed, and it's running just the way they want it to. All right? We need to come out of it and claim original jurisdiction and know who we are, that we are men and women on the Republic with God-given rights from Him. You know, you need to get your county rangers up. You need to get your militia going. And then we need to have one peaceful body politic negotiate a stop of the aggression that is coming from this lawless, usurping pirate corporation. Now,
I'm here, Jake.
one thing that we have to do, one thing that we have to do is recognize the federal municipal corporation's legitimate authority. All right? Now, some people disagree with me on this, and I'm open to criticism. I don't have a set-in-stone gospel position on this. But I believe that if everybody on this continent understood the difference in the organic republic as originally conceived by the founding fathers as opposed to the private, corporate, statutory, federal empire that is the powers that be right now, if they understood the difference, there would still be a lot of people that wanted to be slave property, U.S. citizens of the federal municipal corporation. And if they want to do that, well, then that's fine. And we can respect that. And they can have cops managing their property, people, however they see fit. But boy howdy, I tell you what, the ones who don't want to be in that, we have a duty to make it an ill bargain for them to keep us in there. So the message that we are giving to the de facto corporate players is, look, it costs you nothing to let go of us, and it will cost you everything to hang on to us, I promise. Now, you can hang on to us, and we'll go down in a bloody ball of flames together, or you can let go of us, and we can start working on cultivating a very professional and cordial relationship. Now, I tell you what, there was some people broke into a guy's house out here in Fairbanks, and he ran these burglars out of his house with a BB gun. This old guy, old geezer, ran him out with a BB gun. That's all he had, you know. And they ran off and called the cops and said somebody threatened him with a gun. Oh, never mind the fact that we jumped a 6-foot barbed wire fence and broke into his house before he did that. Well, the cops, being the aggravating buttholes that they are, went out and surrounded this guy's house. And you can look this up. Go to FairbanksDailyNewsMiner.com. That's our local paper, and you can read all about it because we get tons of press coverage. All right, so they surround his house, and he's holed up in his house, and he's afraid that they're going to shoot him. And he calls me, and he wants me to send out a Liberty Bell call. Well, given the volatile nature of the situation and this guy's lack of restraint, the guy whose house, but, you know, guy has an he's got a right to be pissed. The man's home is his castle, and he's under siege, so he shouldn't, you know, maybe restraint isn't what he should have at the time. But that's a fine point. So he calls me, so instead of sending out a Liberty Bell call, I send out just one unit of militia and about two more units kind of hanging back, ready to rush in if they need to. And we go up there, and the cops surrounded him, and so we surrounded the cops and told the cops, you know, hey, guys, go back to your house, and I mean, go back to your cars and put your guns away. And, you know, they're all acting tough and like laying over the hood with an M16, you know, like in the movies, you know. And so we tell them to go back to their cars. And I find the top banana trooper, and I go up and I talk to him, and I say, look, this could, you know, turn real ugly. And this, you know, and try, you know, how can we get this smoothed over? You know, we need to de-escalate. So the guy in the house trusted the militia, but he didn't trust the troopers. And the troopers trusted the militia, but they didn't trust the guy in the house. So we were able to facilitate. They were very respectful to us, and we reciprocated that. We were able to de-escalate that whole thing and talk to the guy and get it all clear up where, you know, nobody got shot. Then, you know, and everything was fine and hunky-dory. Then our sadist, irrational worm of a district attorney, the accuser of the brethren, that guy is such a greasy, nasty guy, he is pressing charges against the guy for assault 4, which is putting someone in fear of harm. Well, shoot, man, if somebody broke into my house, I'd say they ought to be scared, especially just a petty thief. You know,
So that's just sort of a retaliation to, you know, I don't know. That's just the system for you. You know, they just try to hassle you. So that's where we're at. But you know what? They are working with us. And in fact, I got a call from the captain of the troopers saying, Schaefer Cox, we got a guy, you know, out here who's really volatile and we need your help. You know, so they have accepted that we're a fact of life. All right? And like I told one judge, he said, well, you know, I kind of think you're nuts. And I said, well, nuts or not, I speak on behalf of a lot of nuts. And so you should be glad that these nuts have a leader who's willing to be reasonable and negotiate with you instead of just letting this thing boil over into a lynching. And so my advice is it might. See, here's the thing, and I'll end with this, and we'll take some questions, and you need to hear from Michael Donald because he is just up. Comes out of the barrel of a gun. All right? Power comes out of the barrel of a gun. Authority comes from being congruent with natural law, with God's law, with higher law. What we have right now is we have a federal empire that is all power and no authority. And we have us on this call and the men and women on the Republic that are all authority and no power. And we need to change that. Their power is naturally slipping under the consequences of their own irresponsibility. I don't think we have to gun down the beast. They're destroying themselves faster than any of us could ever imagine to do it. But we do need to build our power so that we can couple our power with authority. Because when you couple power with authority, you have peace. And I want peace.
Hear, hear. Well, well said, Schaefer. Man. Thank you so much. Mike McDonald is on with Schaefer Cox, the secretary.
Mike McDonald was the black robe de facto judge. Michael
okay.
Donald. McConnell. That's Michael Donald.
I'm sorry. Michael Donald. Mike, you
here?
Okay.
I'm here.
Thank you for coming on.
First. Oh, you're welcome. Let me do some housekeeping first. That poll
sure.
here at Rise Up for America, what was the URL?
RiseUpForAmerica.com.
RiseUpForAmerica.com, yeah. All right, you got some email coming, brother. All right, I appreciate it. This has been great. I'm going to have to cut off the line here, but Mr. Cox, that is just a wonderful wonderful story you have. God bless you. God bless your family. And
thank you. By the way, I'm not a mister. Mister is an English title, and that's why they always call you Mister in court. So I'm not Mr. Cox. I'm Schaefer of the family of Cox. But let me give you my phone number. And anybody can have this too. It's like totally public. 907-590-9903. And it's also on my Facebook page. Anybody wants to call me, I will take your call anytime. We need to talk because this is a war of ideas. And we have to be strong and courageous and be the stewards of truth.
Amen to that. Gentlemen, you take care, and I will be in touch. Thank you very much.
Keep your chin up. Fight with a smile.
Oh, I shall.
Yeah, fight with a smile.
Bye. All right.
Secretary Donald, would you cover some of the A-bombs of lawful theory that we have served on these pretenders lately?
All right, let me start out by just kind of picking up off a couple of things Schaefer said. I am blessed to have earned a master's degree from one of the best seminaries in the world, and for the last 35 years since I graduated from high school, I have been researching every patriot movement and tax avoidance scheme and Montana Freeman Group and all that kind of stuff. And you know, one thing I do realize that when Moses led the 5 million rabble out of Egypt, those folks had to be let out and they had to be chased out. And we are going to have people that are not going to get it. And I understand that. I understand that people aren't going to agree with what I'm about to put on the table. But the fact is the Father is blessing it. And I find no fault or errors with what we are doing on the assemblies. All right? Now, what most people do with constitutional arguments when they go into court and all that kind of stuff is basically try to save their skin. But what are they doing for the Republic? The fact is, I meet with the FBI on a weekly basis. If I don't meet with them physically, I meet with them on the phone. I update them on cases. As Secretary of the Delegates, I'm the spokesperson for the delegates. I'm the spokesperson to the de facto. And from this office, I issue apostilles. I send in amicus curiae, friend of the court briefs that do not require a consent or leave from the parties or from the court because I'm an elected official of a foreign jurisdiction, and I put it on them. But the key to all of this is you have to establish your chain of delegation of duly constituted lawful authority. And we have done that on our assembly. The word assembly, or the word assemble, is a Greek word, is ekklesia in the scriptures. And the scriptures do not tell us to assemble because it's a nice thing to do. They do not tell us to assemble because it's convenient. It's a mandate that you must assemble. It is a scriptural word. It is a constitutional word. It is a very important word. The framers understood the importance of lawful and peaceful assemblies. The Puritans left England for that very reason. They protested the abuses and the inverted federalism of the church, the inverted federalism of society, and they finally gave up on England. They came to America to do it correctly. The framers constitutionalized it, and that's as far as the history goes with most people in this land. They have no idea what happened in 1861. And I've had one serious education curve with the FBI on this. But our assemblies fill out their personal paperwork pursuant to the Article 1 of their organic constitution, which gives you the right to decree your political will at any point in your life. And if you decree that you operate on the venue of the United States of America as amended AD 1791, then that is your venue. It is not their venue. They assemble. They notice their county and their attorney general that they have assembled, they have elected officers, that they have competent courts, and they are at peace, and they do not need military rule to maintain the statutory enforcement, scheme. All right, somebody needs to mute, please.
Michael, hang on. We're going to try to isolate that caller to mute them out.
Caller, yeah, I think I got him, Fred.
Okay, thank you.
All right, now the statutory enforcement scheme is very interesting. Under common law, there are no monetary damages to real crimes, which requires a victim. Under statutory, in the statutory enforcement scheme.
Want to be on for another half an hour?
Fred, I think that's our other guest. Sounds like Dick complaining because he's not having his turn, but he doesn't understand that we're getting
okay.
There.
Okay. Rick, if...
it's Dick, I think. Or maybe
it's Dick. Could you move him out?
Yes.
And I'll call him on the other line.
Okay, got it.
Or I'll touch base with him. Proceed, Michael. I'm sorry.
All right, under the statutory enforcement scheme, there are monetary damages associated with every breach of their corporate policy. Now, why would that be? It is because the statutory enforcement scheme is for the benefit of the public bankruptcy fund. Everything is about the fund. And so what we do is we assemble, we establish our courts of common law, and we have our hearings on our courts. and we serve the de facto final decree, which is res judicata, with a certificate from the judge and a certificate from the clerk. And if they proceed any farther, then they're subjecting that man or woman to double jeopardy. And they have not, and they're in excess of jurisdiction. They're usually they're in excess of diplomatic immunity. And on and on and on it goes. And I've laid all this out. I've given the whole history of it. I've given all the breaches. I've exposed the judges, the courts, the juries, and the de facto government in front of the court briefs. I've exposed the whole banking system, and I've given all of that to Fred. And it is pretty damning evidence. And there's no refuting it because it is all public law, congressional acts, statutes, and scripture. There's no discretion as to opinion. There are two jurisdictions, and you cannot cross. And when you do cross, you'll be subject to federal criminal complaints, and you're not gonna win at that level because all the evidence is in there. We just pile on the evidence, and I've got four counties right now that I'm into for $800 million. The FBI's got all four cases. So that's the other side of the coin. Schaefer's talking about the physical enforcement side, and I deal with a secretary of the delegates and a judge of my local assembly, and I serve as a court clerk for our district judge. I deal with the lawful side. And when I go into court now, I mean, it's almost to the point where I got to take 8.5 by 10 glossies because I'm such a celebrity, I got to hand out autographs to everybody. I called one the other day that I had a conflict with. I couldn't make it, and they couldn't do enough for me to continue the hearing for another month. Didn't even ask the judge. They said, you know, I'm sure it'll be all right with the judge. Just let us know. And I didn't let them know over Christmas and New Year's, and they called me up and wanted to know such and such a date was okay. They're just trying to push it out as far as they can because I've got them. I've got them locked in by stipulation of the parties. I've got them locked in with a declaratory judgment. I've got them locked in with criminal complaint of the judge for creating a security using false information, which is $1 million fine in 5 years in prison. I've got the attorney, the prosecuting attorney, who has told the court that nothing would be coming forward to indicate that he can administer the estate of Michael Donald Wilson. So there are, and when I go there now, the cops don't even look at me. Last time, the cop didn't even show up. So this is real. It's real and it's lawful. Now the question is, do you really want to fight the court to save your hide, or do you want to repopulate the republic? The republic has always been here. Maximum law is first in time, is first in precedent. They can't get rid of the republic. They can only hide it. Your fiat currency that you carry has two seals on it. One is for the republic and one is for the Federal Reserve. And the reason for that is they cannot get rid of the republic. The question is, what venue are you going to operate on? You know, who have you noticed that you operate on that on the de jure venue? And if you haven't noticed them, then you've got to fight them statutorily. And the problem with fighting them statutorily is they operate by the Libra Code, which is military rules, the Libra Code of 1863. And you can put together the most beautiful constitutional argument you can. And they'll acknowledge that. But then they'll tell you, well, that's a good argument. Unfortunately, I have to rule against you for the doctrine of necessity. They're not going to give up that money voluntarily. So that's where we are on the republic. We have assembled. We have elected our delegates. Our delegates have convened. We have signed a decree. We've served on the Joint Chiefs, the Commander in Chief, and the Supreme Court. They know that the population that the republic is repopulated, and they know that we have our officers, and they are talking to us.
Michael, I'm going to jump in here, and I think this is the next phase, because a lot of people have questions about the republic as it relates to the assemblies, as it relates to
you know, this thing in the past called the Restore America Plan. Could you provide some, because I don't want to, like, pick sides here or pick a fight, but it seems that we're all part of, whether we know it or not, we have the right to populate this organic republic, the true de jure rule of law, whether we know it or not. And ultimately, it's got to come to that point where people all come together as one corpus, as one body. Could you describe what has happened without going into all the minutiae of the details of this process that's been underway that you're part of and that others are trying to be part of around the country? And it sounds like it's a natural process. It's occurring naturally. People are becoming more aware, becoming awakened. They're processing the information. They are assembling, gathering together. I know here in Illinois, I know some of the people, including, you know, I've been at some of these meetings. Just take us through, just briefly, without going through all the details, a lot of progress has been made in the last 2 to 3 years. You've been in this for many, many years. You see, we're beyond the tipping point, right?
Beyond
in a good way.
We're beyond critical mass as far as numbers go. If you want a good expose of what we've done on the Republic as far as the assemblies go, you can go to assemblypost.com and look at the Foundations of Freedom PowerPoint presentation there, and it gives you all the history. It's got all the acts and the laws and the codes and public law and everything in text, and it is a very, very professional 200-and-something slide presentation of what has transpired, what the problem is, what the remedy is, and how to assemble. But basically, the bottom line is the bottom line is this. Corporations organized, unions organized, men and women assemble. And nobody understood that for years and years and years. And I never heard anybody talking that language. And finally, we on the assemblies, I got them on the right page as far as that goes. We had a national organization that was out in the forefront because there were no local assemblies. They stood down while we formed our assemblies and elected our officers and our delegates. And Father has absolutely blessed that ever since. Our local assemblies meet in the local communities. They pass ordinances and so forth. They have their own courts. And, you know, it's just two different jurisdictions. They meet with their commissioners. They, you know, inform these people that, you know, and they let them know we're not a bunch of, you know, patriot goofballs or loose cannons out there. We're a lawful and peaceful assembly. And when you demonstrate or when they demonstrate the chain of delegated delegation of duly constituted lawful authority, they have no recourse against it. It is a totally different jurisdiction, one that they cannot cross. And if they want to maintain their statutory enforcement scheme and, you know, rape and pillage and steal money out of everybody to support their bankrupt state, and people want to do that, then that's fine. But if people don't want to do that, you know, that's fine too. You can't compel them to contract with you. And any contract that you have with them, if it's because of economic duress, you have to have a driver's license to get a job or whatever, no form of duress changes your consent. When you record that consent, when you articulate it in writing and you record it, that is your consent. And an adhesion contract that's, you know, compelled for economic duress doesn't change that consent. I've seen people, you know, doing all kinds of things, you know, canceling all kinds of contracts and everything, putting their family in, you know, touch spots and all that kind of stuff, and it's really unnecessary, lawfully. But we, you know, we have talked with a lot of the rap people for a long time, and I know one of the leaders, the former leaders, he's from Alabama. I know him well, been to many of his seminars. I know his whole system, and he's told everybody that, you know, that's only going to work for people in his territories, quite frankly. And we're not in the territories. So what are you going to do? You have to lawfully, peacefully assemble and take care of business.
Michael, we're going to open it up for questions and comments. Anybody out there, just star 6 for Michael Donald.
Chris.
Yep.
This is Todd from Iowa.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for coming on.
So glad I did. Thanks for keeping me on your list, and I appreciate everybody's sharing their stories. Michael, you mentioned that you're not into territories. Can you give us some definitions, territories versus what you are into, counties, republics? Can you help us with those definitions?
Well, territories are defined by the de facto. It's, the different territories in Title 26 or wherever else, it's not land on the de jure republic.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Territories are possessions of the United States.
Gotcha. Well, that is one of the concerns I have with the current, you know, Republican, or whatever you guys want to call it. It's great to see different ones emerging. And, of course, the challenge we have here in our respective, you know, own hometowns is trying to figure out which flag should be flying as we all try to assert our own independence and sovereignty, you know. That's the big challenge. And it is all talk until we assemble, you know. It's so basic. We have to get together with our neighbors and our fellow people, and whether they're in the de facto or not, we have to have discussions with them. And I'm encouraged here that you're having these discussions with federal agents and so forth. That's encouraging.
Yeah, well, you know, a neighborhood is a covenant community.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what color they are. I don't care what they believe. They're a covenant community, and you have to protect your neighbors. And if you are a sovereign, your job is to protect your neighbors. But we, the people of the Constitution, their job is to protect the persons of the Constitution. There are people. We, the people of the Constitution, and persons of the Constitution. And those, we, the people, by the way, are those who married into, those who were adopted by, or those who are the posterity of every man and woman that was on the land prior to the Paris Peace Treaty of 1783, which conferred sovereignty upon them. Those are we, the people that ordain. And the job of those people, the men and women that were on the land prior to 1783, the Paris Peace Treaty, which conferred sovereignty on every man and woman on the land, black and white, are we the people. That is the legal status of we the people. And their job is to protect the persons of the Constitution, the persons of the neighborhood. You as a sovereign by blood, birthright, and descent can intervene for those people. And I, as the Secretary of the Delegate, can enter a case as an intervenor, because somebody's trying to revenue, which is what the word revenue means, a man or a woman or money from the Republic to the public for the benefit of the bankruptcy fund. And that's not going to happen on my watch if I can help it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to come after one of our people, then there's a court of original jurisdiction to do that, and it's the Supreme Court or my office.
It's a lot for people to absorb.
It's a point that you made about, you know, all these people coming together with republics and all that. There's only one republic, and there's only one delegation of delegates that is convened and served that upon the Joint Chiefs and the Commander-in-Chief in the Supreme Court. And I don't know what everybody else is doing. There's a whole lot of talk out there. I know what they're saying. I know what they're doing. But I don't know where they think they are. Because there's only one body politic that has served, that has performed proper jurisprudence, and has served the de facto, the appropriate personnel in the de facto.
It always boils down to recognition as well. You know, people want to be recognized, and everybody's got a different, view on what has transpired. And they always, I'm just so thrilled to hear Schaefer's account, because we can boil all of it down, though, to any right we cannot enforce is no right at all. And the duo that you guys have in Alaska, what you're pursuing, Michael, and what Schaefer's pursuing, it seems like such a winning combination. I'm just really glad to have been able to listen to this call. I appreciate all your guys' work.
This is Schaefer. Let me jump in there. Back in June, I was elected as Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces for the delegate at large that Michael is the secretary for. So
mm-hmm.
it's more hand-in-hand than you know.
Well, it's organic, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
But you can enforce it physically, and you have to do that at times. But I got to tell you, when you got a judge that's creating securities off a case number, within 48 hours of issuing that case number, he gets fined. He creates a security that goes into the court registry investment system, which averages $1 billion a day. All right, and you bring that to his attention, and let him know that you're going to file a criminal complaint, which nobody's doing. If you're not filing, creditors always sue. If you're not filing a counterclaim, then you know what are you doing? What's the point of all this? You're just reacting. And when you file a counterclaim, and then you file a complaint against the insurance company, and the insurance company says, well, you know, we don't bond criminal acts. Now this judge is personally liable, and the prosecutor is personally liable for their activities. All you got to do.
Michael, there lies the recognition factor that I spoke about earlier. That now you're dealing with the insurance company, and they are recognizing your claim, and therefore, you know, withdrawing their support of the encumbered, or whatever the bond, or whatever you want to call it. I mean, that recognition is pivotal. You can't control that, can you? Is it just by their good graces they do it? What is the leverage there?
Absolutely not. It's not by their good graces. When you give them a judgment, they have no choice. And I tell these guys, I said, look, when I get done with you, son, you're not going to be able to get a job as security guard at Walmart, because you're not going to be bonded. And once you're not bonded, nobody's going to bond you. And you're done.
This is Schaefer.
And this is why when I go into court, they can't even look me in the eye anymore, because they know they've already been spoken to. They know their butt's on the line.
This is Schaefer. Let me speak just real briefly about recognition. When the Founding Fathers wrote the Declaration of Independence, they did not solicit recognition. They did not appeal to recognition. They said, we hold these truths to be self-evident. All right? And then later on they said...
Hello?
I think we lost Schaefer for a moment, Michael.
Is that Kelly?
Kelly.
All right.
You can have to call back in.
Kelly Russell is up. Hello? Okay.
I think we lost Schaefer.
We'll wait for him to call back in. Michael, you want to continue?
Sure. Just a word there. Kelly Russell serves as president of the delegates, and he's a good friend of mine. We converse every day. And Kelly, jump right in anytime you want. But you know, I'm perfectly happy to take questions from anybody if you have any questions as far as what we're doing and how the Lord has blessed us. But it has been quite an amazing development over the last, I would say, particularly over the last 2 years. The Father's really brought some serious people to the table, and he's really blessed our activities and as far as what we're doing.
Okay, we're kind of waiting for Schaefer to get back on the call. We're just going to be patient here. Anybody else, as we wait for Schaefer to call back in to get back on the call, because he was in the middle of making a statement.
Michael Donald.
Yep, go ahead, yes. Mike, Jim.
James Christus.
Yes.
How are you?
Doing well.
Well, it seems like you're pursuing everything as you were doing, and you're having some success, which I'm happy to hear. I was wondering, have you seen the latest efforts? Now we have state attorney generals that are taking issues with the 14th Amendment?
Who is we and what Attorney General? Are you talking about
The state attorney generals, the corporate attorney generals are now trying to take an issue with the 14th Amendment because of the illegal immigration?
No, I don't really follow them. Focus on what we're doing on the lawful side.
Oh, I understand that. What I'm trying to do is to reach over to the other side that does not or is not aware of what's going on. And we obviously, I think that you would concur with me that the 14th Amendment has created another citizenship.
Well, here's the thing about the 14th Amendment, and I don't think people understand this. I live down here in Alabama, and it is fixed in our congressional record that July 13th, 1868 was the day of usurpation when the provincial general came in with bayonets, marched the legislature out, put a bunch of carpetbaggers in there. People of Alabama voted down the Reconstruction Constitution, 79,000 to 70,000, and he decreed it passed, but all to get that 14th Amendment through. The 13th Amendment prohibits involuntary slavery. The 14th Amendment permits voluntary slavery. That's the bottom line. Okay? So a lot of folks are, they're just happy being 14th Amendment slaves.
Well, I haven't heard it put that way. I'd always learned it as the 13th Amendment prohibited slavery and involuntary servitude, but it didn't prohibit voluntary servitude. So you're saying the 14th Amendment has voluntary servitude?
That's what the 14th Amendment is for.
Okay. That's a new twist. Thanks.
Hey, Michael, we're still waiting for Schaefer to call in. Is he back? Okay.
Yes.
All right, Schaefer. We lost you there. Sorry. You were in the middle of talking about these truths we hold are self-evident in from the Declaration.
Yep, I was saying that you don't. It's all fine and well to have recognition from others, but it's not a necessity. And that if you're not brave enough to be the first, then you're not worthy to be the last. We hold these truths to be self-evident to them now. We don't have to wait on validation from pirates.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of echo.
I'm getting a lot of echo here too.
I can't mute anyone unless I know what Michael's area code is.
Michael's area code.
Well, Mike, what's your area code, Mike?
423.
Okay, leave everybody else out. Sorry. Kelly is a 253.
All right. Schaefer, what was your last point there? I'm sorry, I got sidetracked with that.
Oh, I was just saying that it's all fine and well.
Oh, recognition.
He was asking, who recognizes it. Well, we hold these truths to be self-evident. The Founding Fathers didn't appeal to, these foreign lords and barons recognize this. They said we hold these truths to be self-evident, which is a far more powerful argument. Now, while it's fine to be recognized, it ought not to be your goal, and it certainly ought not to be a deal-breaker. On the Bible and on the truth that's written in our hearts.
That was referring to one of my meetings with the FBI about 3 weeks ago. They both happened to be local cops, the two I was meeting with that day, and one of them said, you know what, Michael, here's the problem. When I was local, if you had showed me this documentation that you just explained to us, I wouldn't know what to do with it. And I said, well, let me ask you this. If somebody showed you an apostille notarized, certified, recorded document that they are an elected official on a foreign jurisdiction, would that not raise a red flag of diplomatic immunity? Well, of course it would. I said, well, would you throw that person in jail? Well, no, you couldn't do that. I said, well, that's what your local cops are trying to do. And that's when they asked me to put training together for the local police. And I told them, I said, you know what?
I don't have any question as to your motive. I think you have a pure heart. You're interested in justice and you're interested in righteousness. I do question the motive of where this is going to. And they said, well, after what you told us, you know, you have a right to be skeptical. I said, no, I'm not skeptical because of what has happened to me. I'm skeptical because I used to work for Homeland Security, and I know where this is going, coming from, and I know where it's going. So you're not pulling anything over on me. And I've become a pretty good resource to them at this particular point. But the question is, whether that foreign jurisdiction is recognized or not, if you present documentation that you are in a foreign jurisdiction, they cannot move forward without satisfying that. And that just opens it up for all kind of liabilities. And once you get them out of their public liability and public capacity by their actions, then they are personally liable, and they're under personal liability and personal capacity, and they're outside their limited liability umbrella, which they have to have because they're in bankruptcy. Now they are naked before the court.
Michael Donald.
Yes.
James Christopher. You know, I'm listening to what you're saying. I understand where you're coming from. I understand the whole assembly system. I'm involved with it. What I would like to see is, how do we get Sherry Jackson Peel out of jail? How do we get Wesley Snipes out of jail? You know, we just lost Dixon Cannon. He died in jail, you know, for allegedly violating internal revenue laws. How do we get these people out of jail? Because that's what we need to do. That's like,
well, I serve as a court clerk and a judge. Without the facts in front of me, I can't really address that. It strikes me that they didn't establish proper jurisdiction. They didn't establish a delegation of duly constituted lawful authority, and they ended up in the wrong jurisdiction. And that's what happens when you do that.
Well,
now,
I understand.
They tried to do that to me. I showed up in court one day. Actually, I served papers on the court. They got them the day before court. When I called down there to see what time court was, they had canceled court for the day. They canceled court for the day. I found out from the magistrate, who is the clerk for the judge, because they had to confer with the people who they share revenues with which is Washington, D.C.
When I showed up in court,
I established what my jurisdiction is, and they, six of them, jumped me in court. They tried to book me and realized they weren't going to do it. They thought I was going to fold, and one cop was going back and forth, and he finally came in and said, you know what? There's been a misunderstanding between our two courts. Somebody's take the handcuffs off this man. He's been around the block a few times.
Well, I understand that, Michael Donald, but the point is that the information that the assemblies are coming out with blatantly present to everybody that these alleged jurisdictions are bogus. So we have people that are in jail under bogus jurisdiction.
I said they were bogus. There are two jurisdictions.
Okay. But there are jurisdictions that were presented to them, and they did not have the knowledge, or they hired an attorney. But they went into that whole thing without knowledge. And so if they don't have knowledge, the whole thing is bogus, and there should be a way that we should be able to get them out.
Okay.
Hey,
well,
Tim, we can't have a really involved discussion back and forth on this, unfortunately, tonight, because we have a third guest, Rick and Dick, right in the wings here, and they've got a great presentation right on the. So if somebody else could, if we could hold off on that, and Jim, We'll have hopefully Michael back on at a later date, and we can maybe hash some of this stuff out, the details. Anybody else for a comment or question for Michael? And Mike, again, thank you so much for coming on. Schaefer, your presentation again is just very inspiring, and want to also just before you go, just anybody else beyond Jim? So I didn't want to have it go back and forth and continue like that. Sorry, Jim, but I know your thought is well meaning, and I totally agree with your point. Anybody else? Okay, Michael, you want to say one last word on?
The fact that you know, it's important that you assemble, and it's important if they cross that jurisdiction that you countersuit, you counterclaim, and you go after their liabilities once they're exposed, and it's easy to expose them. And once you do that, then you've got all kind of help to get that enforced. You can do it physically like Schaefer does, and then you get enforcement through their own statutes. When they break their statutes, when they breach their own statutes, you can use that against them. You can't use it for your defense because it's a different law form and a different jurisdiction, but you can certainly use it against them.
Okay.
All right.
Michael, thanks. God bless, and appreciate you coming on. And Schaefer, if you're still on, thank you so much for joining us again on the call tonight.
Yeah, it was good to be here.
And please, everyone, say a prayer and think positive, as Schaefer keeps recommending. Be positive, prayerful, and you're sure an inspiration, Schaefer. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, fight with a smile. Liberty always wins because tyranny self-destructs.
Amen. Thank you again.
Bye.
And hang in there, guys, on the call here. Our next guest is no stranger to this call. Actually, two people, Rick and Dick, have been on this call many, many times. They were on doing an updated presentation on their work a few months ago. As they come back on, they're always up to something bigger, grander, better. And if there's one thing about Dick and Rick, it's about very focused, insightful ways that people can organize and assemble and actually affect something that does something. And they've got a great idea here, and I haven't finished going through the packet, but I think it's something I think will grow on all of us. And they're here tonight to present it for the first time on the call. Rick, Dick, thanks for your patience and hanging in there. The floor is yours.
Okay, I'm Dick. Rick, are you on the line too?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Still awake.
All right.
That's my bedtime.
From the Constitution State. Both.
Wow, the Constitution State. Isn't that great?
It was read in Congress, no less, today.
That's impressive. That's very impressive. I am impressed.
Yeah. I like to see him follow it, though, not just read it.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, you want everything, right?
Okay, as we've done in the past, we've got a little written presentation that we're going to give you here, and we're going to each speak in turn. And I want to thank you for inviting us to speak to you again. And I'm going to kick it off. Here we go. I would like to tell you a short story as an introduction to our message. I attended the recent Boston Tea Party conference where, in the course of one afternoon, speeches were given by no less than 24 people. One speaker urged us to run for elected office, but none of the others ever offered a plan as to what action they wanted people to take. Ed Griffin, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, gave his usual excellent presentation and finished up with the remark that he felt obligated to tell people what he wanted them to do. He then made the incredible statement that he did not know what to tell people to do, and then he sat down. I sat there dumbfounded. The 300 people at that conference were accustomed to go from meeting to meeting, listening to all kinds of speakers fill their heads with all kinds of horror stories about what is happening to our country, and leave satisfied that they have done their duty.
Well, we recently mailed a small padded envelope to a number of you who are regulars on these calls. That envelope contained an audio CD and a companion data CD entitled Stop Federal Tyranny Now, a plan for state legislators to invoke state powers over the federal government. That plan, which if successfully implemented on a national scale, has the very real ability to do just that, to stop the tyranny bearing down on all of us and start restoring real freedom and prosperity to the people of this country and, by extension, to the rest of the world. Yes, it is that powerful if people get behind it and use the power of the law. However, other than the kind invitation by Fred Smart to address you this evening, we have not heard from any of you, any one of you who received that packet, not even an acknowledgement of receipt of the CD packet. I just got it today, Dick.
I just got it today.
Oh, you just got it today?
Yes.
Okay. So why it took so long? I think it was December 27th. I mailed it anyway. I don't know if you who have received it realize this is an actual action plan as opposed to a sit-back-and-listen plan, but it is an action plan. The only listening you need to do is to spend less than 1 hour listening to the audio CD and then read the documents on the data CD, not a lot of them, but there are some supporting documents, and then to get going. Here is the basic plan. Each set of CDs, that's one audio and one data CD per set, that's the packet, is to be hand-delivered to all state legislators in as many of the 50 states as possible. The audio CD provides some background information about the massive corruption rampant in the federal government, which most people on the call are familiar with, also the agenda behind it, and a rather graphic picture of how that corruption is destroying the middle class by destroying the economy. Legislators can listen to the audio CD in the car, at home, even on the toilet, as long as they listen to them.
The audio CD then tells the legislators what they must do to stop this madness. The first action is for them to promise to sign, notarize, and publicly record a constitutional affidavit that they are abiding by the oaths that they took to uphold the federal constitution and their state constitution. The format for that affidavit is on the companion CD. The second action is for the legislators to work to enact a law nullifying Obamacare. We present considerable background information on the audio CD that makes the case for nullifying Obamacare. The companion CD contains model legislation as well as more material about nullification.
The third action on the CD is what we consider to be the centerpiece of the Stop Federal Tyranny Now plan for state legislators to invoke state powers over the federal government project. If successfully implemented, it would totally restore our country as a viable constitutional republic with freedom and prosperity for all. Now, you might say that's an ambitious goal, and perhaps it is, perhaps even an impossible one. So our challenge to you is to prove otherwise. This CD packet is essentially an information tool you can use to exercise the power the people have always had, but have always ignored. The CDs provide the information while the people provide the action. Now, there's not enough time on this call tonight to explain the plan in detail, so we'll just cover the highlights. The full details are actually on the CDs. Each state legislator is to pass a bill that charters a state bank whose mission is to implement an alternative currency. This currency is a public currency that is to be controlled exclusively by the people, not the government or any private group, institution, or cabal. The bank's board of directors will be elected from ordinary citizens in the counties or other state political subdivisions to keep control in the hands of the people in their interest. Now, this currency is also to be asset-based, but not based on precious metals, not on gold or silver, and not in any commodity. The reason for this is simply that by basing a currency on a commodity makes it subject to control. We are seeing that today, our currency used to be backed by gold many years ago, so you all know how the banksters have taken control of it. But they cannot control the alternative currency we are proposing here because it is based on the labor, productivity, skills, ingenuity, and inventiveness of the people themselves, and the banksters cannot manipulate that kind of currency. There will also be no interest charged on loans, and there will be no taxes because there will be no need for taxes. How is that possible? Those of you who receive the CDs will understand how it is possible, provided you reviewed them.
If you would like to stop being an armchair patriot and would like to take real action that will take back our country, then sign up to become a state coordinator. State coordinators will commit to go to their state capital and distribute CD packets to all of their legislators. There can be more than one coordinator in each state. In fact, this project needs all the volunteers it can attract in as many states as possible. The current plan is for the distribution of the CDs to the state legislators to take place the week of February the 21st, when all but a handful of legislatures are in session. The coordinators must follow up a week later to make sure the legislators who receive CDs have reviewed them, to answer questions they may have, and to continue pressuring the lawmakers into completing the three tasks. This is where the project will succeed or not. One should not entertain any illusions that any of these legislators will willingly even look at the CDs, let alone take the actions they prescribe. Like the constitutions, the CDs cannot enforce themselves, which is why this project needs the people to exercise the power they all wield over the federal government and demand that their state legislators honor their oaths. By implementing all three actions we've just described, the legislators will be abiding by their oaths. By refusing to implement these actions, they will be perjuring their oaths and as such, the removal from office by the people. Since Rick and Dick cannot fund the cost of duplicating hundreds and hundreds of CDs, we ask the coordinators to commit paying $1 for each CD packet required to cover their legislature. Those of you who received the package we sent in December will find information there as how to contact us. For others who would like to become coordinators, please work through Fred Smart. He can arrange a connection for us to talk to you.
I'd like to add just one thing. Dick mentioned Jack and Margie Flynn earlier in the call, and I think they've been on your call a couple of times, so you probably are familiar with who they are, using only constitutional methods to remove corrupt public officials and judges and politicians from office for oath violations. And we have partnered with them in this. In fact, they are the authors and creators of the alternative currency we just described, as well as the constitutional affidavit. And they're serving as advisors and consultants in this program as well. So if questions are to be had, they can be directed toward Jack and Margie. I invited them to the call tonight. I'm not sure if they're online or not, but if they're able to be on the line, they'll be listening. They also referred me to a short YouTube video, which you might want to watch too. It's only about 6 minutes long. It's called The Madness of a Lost Society, Final Warnings. Very good summary of the economic situation. We can pass that link along to Fred if you want to watch it.
I guess that's about it, Fred.
Okay. Rick and Dick, before we open it up, just a quick question. You know, it's always been a challenge to get information out there to people, much less, you know, have people work on that information. One thing you didn't really stress here in this presentation was the fact that we have to, you know, focus on the states at the local level. You know, you have a Tenth Amendment focus here in the documents that I have before me. Could you kind of comment more on that? The Ninth and Tenth Amendments to the Constitution.
Well, you know, the power has always been, reserved to the people. You know, if the federal constitution is a limiting document, limits and enumerates the powers of the federal government, and it says in the 10th Amendment that those powers not so enumerated are reserved to the states and the people. You must always keep in mind that it was the people and the sovereign state republics who created the federal government. But the media and the White House and the administration all treat it as though the federal government is all powerful and coming down on us, and it's not that way. And of course, the education system is that way too. So we are recognizing, along with many other people in the movements, that and also the actions out there. There are many states that are getting some kind of nullification legislation going against either Obamacare or other draconian measures too. So the movement has some momentum, and it's totally constitutional. It's totally within our power. It's the organic constitutional power. Nick and I both feel, and I think a lot of you will also agree, that the federal Congress is really beyond redemption. It's just not going to, you're not going to fix anything for there. It's horribly corrupted.
Remember, the states created the United States. Look at the title of our country, the United States of America. It's not the federal government of America. The states created the federal government, not the other way around. And if you read the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, you will see that the states have the ultimate authority. If it comes to a knockdown battle, the states will win. At least it will win if the Constitution is obeyed.
Just to add to what you said, at the 2004 Constitution Party National Convention, where Michael Perutka was nominated, and so was Chuck Baldwin, when they, any mention of the United States they had there was with a small u, a lowercase u, and a capital S. So the real way the United States is supposed to be written is not even with a capital U.
I find all this business about the United States versus the states to be terribly, terribly boring and complicated and everything else. You know, when I was a kid growing up in school, you know, you saluted the flag. This is the United States of America. Now that I'm in my 70s, I discover that it's all screwed up. There's there's two kinds of government. There's two kinds of courts. And listening to these fellows that were on previous to Rick and I hear about these things, and they just drive me out of my skin. I'd just like to salute the flag, follow the Constitution, and take all that other crap and put it in the wastebasket.
Hey, Dick.
Yeah?
Hey, I appreciate what you're saying, but, we'd all wish that all of these things would go away, but that's not the fact of what has actually happened. And, I'm in agreement with Michael Donald, and it's all over. If you began at Spignola, you listen to John Stantmeyer on Republic Broadcasting, Alf Winterode, the War of Northern Aggression changed this country. The states have no power anymore after the War of Northern Aggression, which all the sheeple know as the Civil War.
But they do have the power of constitution.
They don't, because
let's take it back then. God's sakes, let's take it back.
No, I agree, but we can't just go say, the 10th Amendment. No, the 10th Amendment was taken over by the 14th and the 13th.
Well, how about a constitutional convention? People say that would be a disaster.
I would be afraid of it because Americans are stupid.
It's a frightening thing. I agree with you. But so what is Rick and I think the only solution is for the states to take it back.
Oh, it's for the people, just as Michael Donald said.
Well,
can I jump in here real quick?
Sure.
This is Todd from Iowa, and I applaud your efforts to get the nullification information out there. Gentlemen, I'll do everything I can to help you once I get a look at it here in Iowa. We have a good network here, and I think I can help. But what you ultimately are relying on is the deeds of men.
And it comes down to politics and votes to make it happen in our state. And unfortunately, our votes are counted in secret. They're stolen. It is a corrupt, and you can pick whichever descriptor or label you want to put on it, whether it's criminal, corrupt, de facto, corporate, whatever you want to call it, and it's not what you wish you were saluting to the flag. Unfortunately, it's not that anymore. If the state legislature got up off their knees and did the right thing based on what I'm sure your information says, we would achieve what Michael McDonald wants to achieve as well. But that relies on the deeds of men, and it's not going to happen. That's really the challenge we face, and that's why the Schaefers of the world and the Mr. Donalds of the world are doing what they're doing up in Alaska.
I'd like to counter that real quickly. You're talking about the state legislatures. You need to go to Manta, down to Bradstreet, and you need to look up your state Congress, your state courts, every one of them, to the Supreme Court, to the Supreme Court of the United States. They are all listed as corporations doing business for profit. So
I don't disagree with you. I'm trying to give some solace to I think it's Dick or Rick. I'm not sure which one that I agree. I'd love to be able to do what you're talking about, but we're relying on the deeds of men to just deny that these entities are, they're not beholden to them anymore. No, we're not going to worry about the discharge of debt. We're not going to worry about statutory rule of man versus rule of law. You know, they're not going to do it. They're too afraid.
My only point, Buzz, is that even if we had an honest vote count, you are voting for a corporation.
Okay. All right. That's a fair.
That's all I wanted to point out.
Yep.
I'll go to that.
Hey, Jim,